Ukraine Calling.
Hello, everyone. This is Brian Bonner, host of Ukraine Calling at Hromadske Radio. Ukraine lost one of its best friends this year. Morgan Williams was the longtime executive CEO and president of the U.S.-Ukraine Business Council. He was a personal friend of mine, and if for those of you who knew him, you know why Morgan Williams is so important to Ukraine, was so important to Ukraine, and why the U.S.-Ukraine Business Council is also such an important organization. And so today we're going to talk about Morgan and then how the U.S.-Ukraine Business Council is going to go on without its longtime leader and the values that it has. And with us are couldn't be two better people. Irina Paliashvili, who is acting president now, I believe, acting president, and Eric Luman, who is the chairman of the executive committee, will be joining us remotely from Chicago. So, Irina, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Brian.
We lost a good friend this year. I know you knew him longer and better than I do, did, but I'll start with what he meant to me, the Kyiv Post, what I think he meant to Ukraine and all his friends, families, and the more than 200 members of the U.S.-Ukraine Business Council. I bonded with Morgan over our shared connection to Kansas. He went from Kansas to Kyiv, and he was an ardent, probably because we're both basically monolingual, but he was an ardent supporter of the Kyiv Post and of independent journalism. He was not a guy to sugarcoat things, as you know. He told the good and the bad, and he wanted newspapers that would not just act as cheerleaders. He wanted newspapers to promote Ukraine and its potential, but he also wanted us to call attention to corruption, regulation that is stifling business. He wanted rule of law, and you know, at the end, he wanted Ukraine to win this war, and he was there to the end. And so we shared these values. And I was doing the program and research, and there's just so much that happened between Morgan and the Kyiv Post. We would go to his events that were sponsored at the Blazer Foundation. He would go to our events. We were longtime members, and you know, the dues were $5,000 a year, which is a lot for an unprofitable newspaper. But Morgan plowed all that money back and more into paid advertising, usually around the 4th of July weekend, where we are recording now. And my, you know, fondest memories are, well, he took over the lead of the organization in 2007. I came back to lead the Kyiv Post in 2008. We didn't know each other at that time, but we got off to a rocky start because he was a collector of Holodomor photos, new Holodomor art, new Holodomor photos. And we had published a photo, I identified it as Holodomor, but it was actually a Russian famine. And Morgan was a stickler for accuracy, and he called me on that. And of course, we corrected that. But we got off to a great, you know, relationship after that, and it's one that endured for many, many years. And Morgan is a guy who, you know, the more I think about it, the more I'm convinced that he never wanted to retire. He died at the age of 84, and only days before, as we know, he was hosting a webinar with Swedish economist Anders Asland, and he was set to do one the following week with Timothy Ash, who is, you know, the UK economist and really Ukraine watcher who knows a lot. And, you know, that wouldn't be my style, but I understand that because where I'm from, Minneapolis, St. Paul, we had a famous sports columnist called Sid Hartman who worked until 100 years old, 101 years old. He never retired. People ask him, why don't you retire? He said, I get more enjoyment. This is not a job for me. I get more enjoyment out of being a sports columnist than I would anything else in life. And I think that the same applied to Morgan Williams. I think he got more enjoyment out of that, out of being head of the U.S.-Ukraine Business Council. Because, you know, the story, I mean, it started in 1995. It was a very small organization. He came along in 2005, and he told
early 2000.
He met Michael Blazer. He was a friend of the late Senator Bob Dole. And as he told it to us, he grew it from an ad hoc committee of eight businesses started under President Leonid Kuchma in Ukraine. and grew to a more than 200 members. So he had influence, I have to say, in Washington, D.C. Now, you guys will remember the great grain robbery of 2011. It was an attempt by ex-President Yanukovych, who Morgan detested, by the way. I mean, everybody knows that now, to monopolize grain exports and manipulate the agriculture sector for the profit of the insiders. That was the way corruption worked. I got fired after we published an interview with Yanukovych's agricultural minister. During the interview, he lied three times, kind of like a child trying to try out different lies to the mother, and he got caught in all of them. And of course, no sooner, the reporters hadn't even gotten back, and the agriculture minister was pressuring us to kill the story, and then pressuring got nowhere, pressured the owner. I refused to kill the story, got fired. On a Friday, there happened to be a visiting delegation of U.S. senators, four U.S. senators in Kyiv on a Saturday. Morgan, of course, put me in touch with the staff. I was in the Intercontinental Hotel with four U.S. senators on a Saturday. They issued a statement on Monday. I got my job back on Wednesday. This is the kind of thing that Morgan did if he believed in something and if you were his friend or you were a member of the association. So, you know, that is a long intro. But I wanted to, you know, have your, you guys knew him the best, you and Eric, maybe share your memories. And more important, I think people want to know, going forward, how the U.S. Ukraine Business Council is going to carry on, because it's been very important in terms of organizing events for Ukrainian officials in Washington, D.C., holding receptions, doing cultural events, and before COVID and before the full-scale war, a lot of events in Ukraine. So, Irina, take it away.
I actually have known Morgan since mid-90s. And I have been one of the first members of U.S.-Ukraine Business Council, also from mid-90s. So I have seen, you know, the whole story from the beginning to the present time. And I've been the member of the executive committee also for 20 years and chair of the legal committee. So this is the organization which is very close to my heart and to my professional life and even to my personal life. Because Morgan was, I would call him old-fashioned treasure. He was a person that believed in friendships, but the friendship was something that required shared values. Not anybody could be Morgan's friend. You had to share his values, and then, you know, he would become really your friend and supporter. For me, he was a mentor because I was very young when we met. And this is something that enriched my life, this relationship, for so many years. So, of course, it's a huge loss for all of us. It's a huge loss for the organization. But we learned a lot from Morgan. And today is a completely different era. It's the era of social media, is the era of instant gratification, instant decisions. But those values and those things that, you know, we learned from him, I think they are as important today as they were important decades ago, because personal relationships, personal touch is something that is of the utmost value even today.
So, oh, well, we joined because of Morgan.
Exactly, it. Yeah. Of course, nobody can replace Morgan. Morgan was so unique that it's impossible. They don't make them like this anymore. But what we can do collectively, the Executive Committee of the U.S.-Ukraine Business Council, our leadership, Eric Luman, who is the chair of the Executive Committee, Greg Fishman, the treasurer, active members of the Executive Committee, all our members, we can preserve this legacy and we can move the council forward. But at the same time, you know, remembering where we came from, and remembering the best traits of Morgan's leadership.
As everything he did, there was always a story, there was always a piece of information, there was a piece of history that he would bring in. So in honor of your Minneapolis St. Paul days, I've got my Minnesota Timberwolves hat on here for you.
Excellent.
Because you know I hail from Shakopee, Minnesota as well. So
we
have that in common. And Morgan would always find a way to bring a piece of history into whatever conversation, whatever event, whatever dialogue, whatever communication was happening. So I'll talk a little bit about Morgan some more, but to your request, my name is Eric Blumen, and for USUBC, I actually serve as the chair of the US-Ukraine Business Council. It's a chair of the executive committee. USUBC is made up of roughly 220 members. Every one of those members is a member of the board of directors, but we can't get everybody together all the time when we need to. So we have a group of executive committee members, which are elected each year, 15 members, and then 3 ex officio members from the organization. So I serve as the chair of that arena, who's been on that council for a long time. When I'm not doing USUBC work, my day job is that I work with Amsted Rail Company, Inc., which is a big railway supply company that's been active in Ukraine for many years, but the company is about 150 years old, serving global clients everywhere. So I really got to know Morgan best through the work of the executive committee. I'm probably a newbie in Morgan's universe because I started to be involved with USUBC in 2015-16 or so, and it was just because of Morgan. He invited me to one of their events at the Sigma Blazer facilities. And then Morgan, you know, he'd give you an opportunity to ask a question, then eventually give you an opportunity to sit at the head table. He would bring your company into the discussion. He would find out what could he do for you with the government that he was meeting with regularly. How could he help to facilitate meetings? And gradually, it's like, I want to be part of this organization. And I've heard that story from dozens of different people that, you know, Morgan just helped you understand that USUBC was going to be relevant to your business in Ukraine. And he would bring you into the organization. So as Arena said, we're not trying to replace him. His contributions to USUBC are so significant that it would be hard to do that. First of all, somebody'd have to spend a long time trying to even match his contributions and the number of years and the number of programs and the number of events that he did. The staff loved him and revered him. So what we're just trying to do at USUBC now is to just build off that positive base, that positive foundation that Morgan and the team has already built. We've appointed Arena as the president of USUBC going forward this year. We'll go through our election process as we always do in the fall. I have every hope and expectation that Arena will want to continue to carry that torch into 2025. And the team is working around the reality that, you know, some stuff will continue as it has and other stuff will change a little bit as we have somebody else at the helm, putting her stamp on how we operate. But we have the full support of the U.S. Executive Committee, the USUBC Executive Committee, for Arena's appointment. And we're going to make sure that our members are served well, and we're going to make sure that Ukraine is a country that U.S. companies and our Western partners, our members from around the world, look at for trade and investment going forward, despite all the challenges that Ukraine is dealing with on a regular basis.
Not only, you know, there is a full continuity of what we have been doing before, there is actually... even before Morgan left us, you know, there were several programs that we introduced for our members that Morgan blessed, including Legal Series, which is the monthly webinars by our member law firms for our business members that bring a lot of value. There are new initiatives, there are meetings, even more and more for our members, both in Washington, D.C. and in Kyiv, Ukraine. But what I think is most important to preserve is the personal touch, because USUBC was different from most of the trade associations by having this personal touch, which was introduced by Morgan. He was speaking in person with every member. Everybody knew him. And then it translated into our meetings. Our meetings are usually smaller scale, where our members can meet the speaker, can exchange information, whether it's off the record or on the record. Still, there is a lot of personal communications. So that's something that is absolutely essential to preserve, because that's one of the features that our members love and that makes us different from other associations.
I'm sure you guys will, because I remember one of our interviews with Morgan, he cited you and Eric and Michael Blazer and about five others as really key to the organization's success from beginning, almost beginning to now. Morgan was praised, as I said, criticized, could be diplomatic, could be blunt. And to the very end, you know, he closed off his last webinar by promoting investment in Ukraine and really wanted to see Ukraine emerge victorious from the war so that we could get back to business. He also didn't stint in criticizing the United States of America when he thought the policy was not going well, and he wanted to see stronger support by America for Ukraine in the war. He, in his words, he called it slow and behind the curve, and that's a Morganism. But let's go to maybe, and I have to say this, I remember, because you're a lawyer and you're very schooled at, you know, you've given a lot of interviews to the Kyiv Post to try to help us understand the legal system, what's right, what's wrong, what needs to be changed. I pulled out a 2015, 9 years ago interview. Is it time to scrap Ukraine's legal system and start over with another nation's system? Irina Paliashvili, throw everything out, replace it with somebody else's laws. Ukraine's legal system and judicial system need external management. Find the most modern system in European countries. I have no trust in the current judicial system, which is actually being reinforced as far as I can see. It's beyond fixing. Does that sound like you?
That's me, actually. And we have to make a note here that it was 2015.
9 years
and
ago.
And a lot of things have happened since then. Of course, now we are on the path to the EU membership. And aligning and unifying our legislation with the EU legislation probably largely will take care of that. When I was speaking about this in 2015, EU membership was still a very, very far dream, I would say. Right now, it's reality. So whether the old Ukraine wants it or not, the legislation will have to be brought into compliance with the EU legislation. So I think it's largely will take care of this problem.
It's a long conversation, but we made some progress in rule of law.
For sure, yes.
But at the same time, we're still picking a new Supreme Court. We're still picking a new Constitutional Court. Again, we still have we have to pick a whole new Kyiv Administrative Court.
Yeah,
the
Supreme Court is in place, actually. So they are functioning very well.
It was the Constitutional Court that's
right.
There are the Kyiv Administrative Court. Yeah, that's right. And we have new anti-corruption agencies, of course, and a new anti-corruption court.
This whole anti-corruption architecture was actually proposed to Ukraine by Western donors.
Yeah.
And there were all these bits and pieces, all these building blocks, and it took a long time to put this anti-corruption architecture
very
in place.
Time.
Very long time. Because it was complicated from the beginning. I think, you know, looking back, the structure was too complicated. And when it was proposed to Ukraine, I don't think anybody understood, you know, how practically to implement it and how long time it will take. So finally, everything is in place, including anti-corruption court, and it's functioning. So
is it fair to say that the main institutions, the traditional ones, General Prosecutor's Office, Security Service of Ukraine, and the investigative agencies are not as reformed as we would like and not delivering justice?
Some of them more reformed than the others, but some of them are being now rebooted again. So it's still work in progress for sure, but a lot has been achieved.
Right. That's good news. Still, I hope we get swift, sure justice, because if you look at the public surveys, still the courts
are we're really still low. Behind, yes. And of course, for our members, for investors, this is number one priority. Really? When they're coming into the country, they want to make sure that their rights are respected here, that if something happens, they can count on a fair trial. So these are all expectations that Ukraine still needs to fulfill, but we are on this path.
I wanted to ask you another thing. Morgan, he, you know, in the USCBC was dead set against the monopolization, against oligarchy control, for competition, for free enterprise. He, for many years, pushed for the land sales. Where are we at from your perspective in terms of, and I know the railways, he wasn't particularly a fan of the way the state had monopolized the supplies there. Is there similar progress going on, or what is the state of play as far as you're concerned in terms of creating an investment climate that's going to attract people or attract investment?
Yeah. You know, you mentioned earlier how Morgan was always, you know, pretty blunt in his comments and discussion. I mean, he was a group of one for the most part. Maybe you can add Arena there with their 2015 article on the courts. But Morgan was really in a group of one where, you know, he let people know what the situation was. And working with them on the executive council at USCBC, I can tell you he let us know where he thought we were on some of those issues as well. But, you know, Morgan and I talked a lot about the railways because that's the industry that I'm in. This word that he started to use, demonopolize, it actually was something that we chatted about quite a bit because he was talking about how he wanted to, you know, he was advocating for privatization of the railway. And I kept telling him that it's really not an issue of privatization, but it's an issue of demonopolizing the system. Because you couldn't privatize the Ukrainian railways. It was just too big and too monstrous to be able to think that a private entity was going to come in. And there were other industries within Ukraine that were also in this, you know, having the same reality. So we talked about demonopolization because they needed to, Ukrainian railways had to fall away from being this monster of owning the infrastructure, all the passenger traffic, all the locomotives, all of the freight system. Now, some of that from when we started talking about it in 2016 or so just became a reality. The freight sector today, Ukrainian railways maybe owns 30% of all the freight rail cars that operate in the country. 70% is owned by the private sector. So it's already been demonopolized to some point. And the locomotive sector and the passenger sector are still very much Ukrainian railways owned and operated, as is the infrastructure. But you can't expect all of that to be privatized or demonopolized completely today. Just having the freight sector be more commercial is fantastic. Obviously, Morgan had a real vested interest in the agricultural industry, coming from Kansas and working in the United States Congress, Senator Dole on agricultural issues over the years in the early part of his career. So agriculture was another thing where he was like, just let the state support the process, but we have to leave it to the private farmers. And he was a big advocate of championing, you know, pull the state out, stop letting all of the train traffic, in my case, the train traffic going to the state grain facilities, and have them start supporting the private grain facilities. All of this stuff has started to resolve itself. Obviously, the war today is not helping in any way, but prior to the war, a lot of these monopolies were starting to see some competition, some investment by the private sector, and some gradual natural breakdown of those monopolistic realities. And some of this was due to Morgan and his connections with the government and his constant reminders that the system needed to change for the better.
Oh, he stayed consistent. And so there is progress in those areas that you mentioned, competition, just like there is rule of law. That's heartening. But is it fair to say we're not going to see a big investment until the war is over?
I think maybe outside of the defense sector, that's probably a very accurate statement. And even in the defense sector, you know, companies are going to be cautious. A lot of the American and Western companies have travel restrictions where their people can travel to the theater, if you will, to the market. But I think there's going to be pretty significant investments in the connected with the production and repair of the military equipment that's being used, the assets. I think the energy sector is going to call for significant investments because there's just no really way to band-aid out of the situation. So I think in some areas you're going to see some major investments, but in agriculture, you've got the demining aspects that need to take place. You've got the issues with the corridors that are being used to get product out of the country because Ukraine exports so much of its agricultural output. In the railway industry, you know, we've got a joint venture. My company has a joint venture in Zhytomyr Oblast, but that company has been really disrupted, Brian, since 2012 when Russia started its economic embargo of Ukrainian products. And the Ukrainian railway industry, about 80% of what it manufactured went to Russia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, Central Asia, and the like. So the railway sector is really stagnated from 2012, 2014, once the initial invasion took place. But there's been huge improvements, right? You've had Western locomotives come into the market. And if those diesel locomotives weren't in the market today with all the electricity challenges, imagine how even more complicated the system would be. You've got a Ukrainian builder in Kremenchuk, Krukovsky Wagon Building Company, which is a proud member of USUBC. They invested tens of millions of dollars to put up this was back in the 2012, 13, 14 timeframe when the initial relations with Russia started to break down. They put in a passenger wagon building operation in Ukraine. Before that, everybody bought from Tver in Russia. Imagine where Ukraine would be today if it didn't have that domestic passenger wagon building operation. So Ukraine makes investments in difficult and challenging times. And I have no doubt that there'll be some medium-sized projects that continue to go forward and some major support from Western companies and IFIs, international financial institutions. But yeah, it's probably going to be a challenge to find the real major capital-intensive investments to be made in Ukraine until the war comes to some type of logical end, ideally, but, you know, a real end to the active hostilities.
I agree with Eric. It actually depends on the industry, depends on the specific area. So it's like case by case basis. I think that two things at least are necessary to even, you know, make those investments more comfortable coming in. First of all, it's a war risk insurance. And there are efforts being made by the governments of our partner countries where they're providing investors originating from those countries with certain guarantees and assurances and funding and financing. And then there is also private industry, which is also now looking at offering war risk insurance, both in Ukraine and internationally. So I think when the war risk insurance will be sorted out, we will see more. But of course, the other aspect is improving the conditions here domestically. And that means deregulation, demonopolization, rule of law, fair courts. So this is something which Morgan has been saying for decades. It's still true. There has been progress. We already talked about it, but those issues have not gone away. So, you know, between our accession to the European Union, between assistance from our partner countries and our own progress here domestically, I think we can actually create favorable conditions. And deregulation actually proved to be really one of the major catalysts for investment. When the war started, the big war started, the government lifted a lot of restrictions very quickly, and the business responded in kind. The business started doing things. Actually, it's a private initiative and private business who also contributed a huge deal to saving Ukraine's economy. And then, you know, after a while, the government started putting those restrictions back and those regulations back. And now the business is back at square one. So the government, I think, should learn from this experience. When the restrictions were lifted, all of a sudden, you know, everything was going right. So maybe that was a good example for them to follow.
Yeah, in a long sweep of history, I mean, and I'm glad two of you are occupying places where you know the history and you also have a vision for the future. We are still in this stage, in very industry by industry, private, public sector, education sector, where we are moving away from the Soviet legacies and sorting it out so that Ukraine can be a full-fledged member of the European Union, yet retain the beautiful qualities that are Ukraine. You know, there's one thing I wanted to ask you, and it's a small point about war risk insurance, because I had a program recently in the energy sector. And the problem with that is that they have very low limits in the war risk insurance. So they need to be higher to make a difference. Are you finding that in different sectors too?
Yes, I, you know, I'm hearing this from businesses that the limits are still low. But if investors from specific countries talk to their governments who provide the funding and the war insurance, you know, that's the message they have to deliver to their governments, because Ukraine has no way of influencing this. So it actually differs government to government. I know Germany does a lot. I know Denmark does a lot, but those are just the ones that I was able to learn about. Now, when I just want to make a comment, when you say that, you know, Morgan, there was a team, I want to say that, you know, the team that Morgan created, and now I'm talking about USUBC Associates, the staff, Morgan had a real talent for finding great people. And we have excellent staff both in Washington, D.C. and here in Kyiv, Ukraine. And the team stays put. They are working day and night right now. So we are very fortunate to inherit Morgan's team. But this is now USUBC's one of the best assets that Morgan left, the team. So we are very fortunate to have them.
You know, I always wanted to join all the business associations, particularly USUBC, because your members would be the first ones to talk about problems. Like, they will bring up the problems that they're having. And so we could get a real understanding of the economy. And if there were no complaints, then there were no problems. Everybody was making money.
I don't think there is any country in the world where there's no problems.
No,
and everybody's happy to make money.
Definitely not. So, but we got to come out of a deep hole, because we lost still 25% of our economy after the big war. I just want to get a sense, if you know, because everybody's got to change, and Morgan's spirit will guide, but it will be you guys that have to decide. You know, I learned a lot from watching Morgan's family funeral. I learned why he loved Ukraine. It reminded him of Kansas. And Ukraine, no matter what, is an agricultural powerhouse. It's just such a fertile ground. And I know he wanted to see it make even more progress in productivity and in refining products, value-added products, I guess we call it, rather than just export raw grain. So he had a lot of those priorities. And he also, you know, as I learned from the family, he was a huge collector of everything. And I knew that he art and art asters and promoting Holodomor art to preserve history was big on him. Will the USUBC continue with some of the same priorities, cultural events, his sectoral priorities, or how do you see differences, if you see any?
Maybe the only difference is that we are not collectors. So probably we will not be devoting, you know, a lot of energy to collecting. But you are right. Morgan's priorities were correct priorities for USUBC. Every organization, every trade association, and every member of the trade association has social responsibility. And Morgan was taking that extremely seriously. He was supporter of Ukraine culture, of Ukraine's education. So we will continue this, and our members individually and we as the organization, definitely this will be a very big part of our activities. So there is no question about it. But what I want to add also that for Morgan, Ukraine gradually became his life and his passion. Same like USUBC. When he started at USUBC, he was initially just there to help save the organization, reorganize, reboot the organization. And then gradually it became his life and passion. And the same is true about Ukraine. I'm from Georgia originally. I came here to study law and then I stayed here. I married a Ukrainian, so it also became part of my life, my second home. But Morgan always told me, you and I are Ukrainians by choice. So Morgan was Ukrainian by choice. He was a great patriot of the United States, but he also a great patriot of Ukraine. This is very important that business speaks about the issues that will improve the country, improve the investment regime, because the country needs investment. So if nobody tells the government, if nobody tells, you know, the country what needs to be done and for business to come in and prosper here, they won't know. There is no place for diplomatic language here. I think business is very clear. Different trade associations are saying the same thing. We are producing policy papers. We are writing letters. We are involved in advocacy on behalf of our membership. And that's a very important job, because if we don't do that, nothing will improve. So that's something that Morgan has been doing very forcefully, and USUBC will continue.
We're very fortunate on the cultural side that Morgan had anointed and Arena gracefully accepted many, many years ago to be the chair of the USUBC Cultural Committee. I don't know that we ever formally established that committee, but Arena was the chair and she worked very closely with Morgan on all of the different events that we've sponsored over the years. Again, like she said, we're not going to probably continue the collection process that Morgan had, and watching the funeral service, you saw that it goes back to very early days, and his family is dealing with, learning a lot about what he collected. We're in contact with the family on a regular basis. We do want to work with them on the Holodomor collection to create a legacy there for that collection in Ukraine, so that long after I'm gone, people will still be remembering Morgan Williams and the work that he did to put together that collection so that it's available to the population. Some of the other things the family is dealing with, and the family has asked us to let everybody know, because they can't reach out to everybody, how they tremendously appreciate all of the warm thoughts and prayers and comments and tributes that they've received over the last month in honor of Morgan. So I just wanted to make sure that that was included today, because the family has asked us to relay that whenever we can.
I wanted to ask, that reminds me, there was a memorial, of course, in California with family and friends, but a lot of his family and friends are here, family not in blood relations, but I think a lot of us considered him part of his family. Will you have a memorial?
Absolutely. I mean, we are planning a number of events that will be dedicated to Morgan's memory and celebrating his life and celebrating his achievements. So those events will be both in Kyiv and in Washington, D.C. Right now, you know, we are thinking through and talking to the family and talking to his friends and talking to our members of the format of those events. And we have some great ideas, but we think of doing them mostly in the fall, like September, October, because right now, you know, is middle of July, and that's the period where people are gone, mostly for vacations. We want also them to be very well prepared. So definitely there will be tributes paid to Morgan. And of course, most of our events are opened with reading the statement, joint statement of USUBC and the family about Morgan. And we try to pay tribute to him every time there is an event, but there will be separate dedicated events to Morgan's life.
Okay. Eric, Can the community count on U.S.-Ukraine Business Council to continue with tough love, and despite a community being fractured by full-scale war, to have events that bring the community together, both here and in Washington, D.C., and to tell it straight to not only the business community, but politicians?
Absolutely. One thing that we're doing to make sure that we can serve our members and the business community at large even better is where one arena is in Kyiv right now. Is actually looking at some office space that USUBC wants to have more of a permanent establishment in Kyiv. Prior to COVID, you know, that we were using facilities that were perfect at Sigma Blazer for many of our events, hosting stuff around the city in different hotels, different members' offices. But we made a decision recently, and Morgan was part of that, those initial discussions. We just unfortunately didn't. Weren't able to wrap things up before his unfortunate passing. But we're looking at office facilities in the center of town that would allow us not only to house the associates of USUBC, the team members that we have, but also allow us to get back to having those in-person events on a regular basis, which we understand are so important to the business community and to our stakeholders, the U.S. Embassy, the ministries around the Ukrainian government, having people be able to come in, spend time together. You know, not all of it was the formal session that was important, but it was the reception that would happen afterwards where people were able to mingle and be able to discuss their particular issues that were, you know, either opportunities or challenges that they had in Ukraine. So we will continue to do that. With respect to being pretty frank, you know, I'm more or less at the end of my career, so I don't have a lot that I need to protect. So I'm going to try to make sure that everybody understands more of the raw version of what U.S. business sees in the market. I think we've continued to do that even in the last month. We've had some events down at the Berlin event. We've had people in France at different events in the defense sector. And we want to let everybody know that we can only get to B if we make sure that A is set up properly. And that it requires an investment climate. Some of this stuff is like standard lingo that just sort of, you know, people say, but it really doesn't always hit really hard. But the investment climate needs to be friendly. I keep telling the Ukrainians that I deal with, Ukraine is competing for every investment dollar and every trade dollar. And those dollars are much easier to spend or to realize in countries that aren't at war. So today, Ukraine even needs to do more to try to ensure that there is an investment climate and a regulatory environment and a rule of law that can be depended upon to get companies to come into the market. And we need to make sure that we press and continue to press that theme with the Ukrainian government and with the international investment community and with the IFIs that are working. Brian, I could just say one thing about the war risk, which will help the war insurance risk. You know, I started out my career with the Overseas Private Investment Corporation. That's what I was doing, was actually advocating and promoting finance and political risk insurance around the world for OPIC. And we have DFC today, U.S. Development Finance Corporation, which is the new, the name for OPIC now.
Right.
And we have MIGA that offer those insurances. But they have their own limits in terms of how much they can have any concentration of insurance in any one particular country or region. What needs to happen is that the international public community, the governments around the world, need to let the Russians know, look, we're going to offer this war insurance. And any payments that we make, you're going to pay for. And just put it on Russia. We're going to insure these companies against war risk. And any payouts that we have to make over the next 20 years is going to be covered by the Russian Federation.
That's good to hear the position. Russia has to pay for what they...
What Eric is talking about, those are insurance premiums, that not premiums, but insurance compensations that they will have to pay.
That these events, and I've been to countless. Is Michael Blazer still involved in the organization?
Yeah, well, he's not. Michael told me when we've been in contact recently, like, I've got so many hats on my head right now that I couldn't jump into USUBC, but he's an ardent supporter of USUBC. He's obviously been in contact with the family because of his relationship with Morgan. So he's not on the executive committee today. He's not, but he's, his company is an active, proud member of USUBC. And we appreciate all the support that he's given USUBC over the years. And we're quite sure that we'll continue to have a good active relationship with him.
Yes, I knew he and Morgan were very close, and they were both very prescient. And we have it on the record, even before the Little War in 2014, they knew what was coming from Russia. And they openly talked about whether Ukraine would be prepared for what was coming. And so I found that very interesting from these two guys. And Michael Blaser, of course, is the Ukrainian-American major investor in Ukraine. And the office is in Mandarin Plaza, the Sigma Blaser. I can't even count how many events that I went to there. There were so many, and they were really, really valuable in terms of bringing the community together, all the different players. So I'm happy to see that continue. You know, I think probably there's a lot more to say, but I will wait for the memorial. And if you have any final thoughts, now's the time. Irina.
Thank you. I just want to thank you, Brian, for having us here at this moment. It's a critical moment, of course, you know, when the organization loses its longtime leader, especially leader of the caliber as Morgan Williams was. But I think it's important also for us to be out there and to let the world know that the organization continues, that we are moving forward, that Morgan's legacy lives, and that all the best things that USUBC was known for will continue. And we hope USUBC, after our victory in the war, will flourish together with Ukraine.
I guess we will leave it there. We'll stay in touch, and we'll be looking forward to the memorial, because he's got a lot of people who love him. And Morgan, we love you, and we will see you again down the road. And thank you for everything that you did for all of us, and for Ukraine and for America. So I will go now. As you can see, this is a person who is very close to me, not just for personal reasons, but for what he did for this country. And I think people should know about that, those who don't. So I think that's a good place to end it. Thank you to my guests, and thank you all for watching. We'll come again next week with another great episode. Goodbye for now.